Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. Today, I have David Rozell of Rozell Wealth Management, an entrepreneurial firm located in Bend, Oregon, who for the past 20 years has specialized in working with affluent individuals and families who are at or near retirement, helping them live the life that they've always imagined. David's got a really unique spin on it. I'm halfway through his book, Failure is Not an Option. For those who are watching us on YouTube, here's the book cover. David, before I'm going to get into your bio a little bit more, but thanks for joining the show today.
Oh, Jonathan, it's so good to be on the show with you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so let me tell everyone why I like your book so much. So, and I'm only halfway through, but I just got it a week ago, is that you tell some great stories about your travel in your younger years. You went into the outback in Australia that, you know, only a young foolhardy individual would do. And I love that. I love how you survived it. It was just great. You talk about, you know, hiking. It wasn't Annapurna. It wasn't Everest. It was which one?
It's Thurong La on the Annapurna Circuit, it's called.
Okay. So, and you tell these great stories and then you equate them all to living kind of the life that you want, living, you know, you talk about retirement. And like one thing that really blew me away, and you know, it's a very, very easy to read book. I love how you roll your aunt or your great aunt in here. I loved page 31, the table, which is just staggering, that a 19-year-old puts $2,000 away every year until they're 26, which is all of 7 years. They'll have over $1 million by the time they're 65, versus a 26-year-old who starts at the age of 27 putting $2,000 away, that it'll take him all the way to 65 and he won't even have $900,000. Like, this is the power of compounding. I know that that's what you were teaching, but like, that's staggering. And that is not something that most young people can wrap their heads around, which is saving money today. You seem to have had a lot of wisdom when you were younger. I know you got some of these lessons from your folks, but I think you had unusual maturity as a young person. I know you had your own businesses. Let me just continue with your bio a little bit. You had your own businesses. You built a, what was it, like an asphalt?
Driveway steel coating, yeah.
Yeah, driveway, you know, coating business. You built that. You sold it. You've lived in Bend for whatever, like 30 years. So you've lived an incredible life. It's a great place to be.
Well, thank you. It's been a great life so far, and in many ways feel like I'm just getting started.
Wow. So, you know, what's your view on retirement? It seems to be a word that you don't like. Why is it? What is it all about? I don't like it either.
That's a great place to start. Yeah. The reason I don't like the word retirement is, here's some useless trivia for you, Jonathan. It comes from the Latin word retire, which means to be put out of use or to end. And let's face it, generation or two generations ago, our great grandparents would work for the same company their entire career. They'd get their gold watch, and 3 or 4 years later, they were dead. They were no longer with us. And retirement truly meant the end. These days, people are phasing out of work much earlier. They're living much longer, and no one wants to be put out of use. Most people that we work with are looking at this as stage chapter three of their life, and they're really just beginning. So the term I like to replace retirement with is being financially independent or independent of the paycheck, because we all know people who are financially independent, but they're anything but retired. They choose to open up that coffee shop or that B&B because they want to stay young, youthful, and active and keep the mind alive.
So as you might be aware, and our listeners are aware, I work with a lot of rising generation or next generation or G2 leaders in smaller family businesses. And, you know, it's a really difficult thing for the older generation sometimes to let go. And so what I'm seeing is that there's some families that have, they're looking at a clear succession plan and they see that the next gen leader is really ready to take over. There are some that don't see it and they sort of half retire. So they kind of golf or go camping or, you know, get the, you know, week, the long weekends at the cabin. But the younger adult in the family continues to run the business. Are you seeing that as a trend?
Yeah, we see a lot of that as a trend. And, next generation businesses, as you know better than anyone, can be tricky. They Yep. can be beautiful and they can be tricky. Ron Ware is one of our team members here at the office, and that's his main focus from a business planning and tax perspective is helping families determine what are the appropriate moves and, most importantly, what's going to bring the most ease into the family. Interestingly enough, the word dis-ease comes from dis without and ease without yep. ease. And that's how a lot of sickness happens. So really important to set up plans that are going to bring the most ease to families.
Yeah. So I want to get back to the book a little bit. I love the parallels or the analogies or metaphors, whatever you want to call them, to hiking, a 26,000 foot mountain. And how that is compared to saving for later and planning ahead. Can you unpack maybe a couple of lessons that you share in the book for our listeners?
Yeah. So what I did is I started off with a true life story of a 21-day self-guided trek through the Himalayas. Granted, I was in my early 20s at the time. And then later on in life, I had an opportunity on several occasions to meet a role model. And the gentleman's name is Ed Viesters, and I'm sure some of your listeners out there have heard of him. Ed has to be the best mountaineer that ever walked the planet Earth. He summited Mount Everest 7 times Wow. successfully without supplemental oxygen.
Wow.
He's the only human that I'm aware of who's summited all 14 8,000-meter peaks in the world without supplemental oxygen. Mm. And the day that Ed shared with me, he said, most people think my goal is to get to the top. And he goes, that would be one of my last goals ever. And I said, what do you mean, Ed? And he said, you see, 80% of the accidents and 80% of the deaths happen on the descent. He said, so our goal is to summit, but get back down alive to our friends and family. And when he followed up that with the statement that it's the second half of his journey that takes the most amount of risks and needs the most amount of planning, that was my aha moment to write that first book, Failure's Not an Option. Mm-hmm. Because I realized that as our clients, who are all people who are at or near retirement, approach that financial summit. And what I mean by that, Jonathan, is it's the wealthiest day of their life. It's the last day that they're adding to their 401ks and IRAs. And it's the first day that they open up that income valve and start living off those dollars for the next 10, 20, 30, and some even 40 years in their years of financial independence. And I realized that it's this distribution phase that also takes on the most amount of risks and needs the most amount of planning.
Interesting. Super interesting. And, as I'm listening to you, I'm reflecting on some archetypes that John Warlow put together. John's the author of Built to Sell and the creator of the Value Builder system. And he talks about a couple of different, like three different archetypes of business owners or entrepreneurs. One is the craftsman type. We all know that. He's basically the handyman or the plumber that really just has a job. Then there's the freedom fighter. That's someone who's looking to build wealth and not change jobs, have an entrepreneurial company and own it for decades, and hopefully maybe transfer it to the next generation. And then there's the true entrepreneur that is the mountain climber. And this is the rare breed. This is the person who's always looking to ascend the next peak. And so in the metaphor here is that they're looking for to exit out of that business and look for the next business they want to start. And so of those three archetypes, do you work with all three? Do you find one easier to work with? They're more planning oriented. I mean, does this question, I know it kind of pops you by surprise a little bit, but.
Yeah, that's it. It's an interesting question. You know, we have only 91 clients, and it took us 21 years to get to 91 clients because we have a very niche market. And out of those 91 clients, we have every different type of personality.
Okay.
And when we're creating a plan, it's certainly not boilerplate. They're wealth distribution life plan. We called risk blueprints because what's important to one person is so different to the next person. Mm-hmm. One of the questions I always ask people is that money means different things to different people. What does money mean to you?
Right.
And it's like peeling layers of the onion off and you're really getting down to a least common denominator of what's important to them. So we're dealing with all different types of personalities, as are you. They all have different value systems, what's important to money and what it's going to take to live the life that they've imagined. And our job is to extract this from them and then create a life financial blueprint around what their goals and their desires are.
Gotcha. So let me ask you a question. What's the difference between rich and being wealthy?
Yeah. So in the book, I talk, the last third of the book goes above and beyond money. Because at the end of the day, you and I are not in the money business. We are in the people business.
Yep.
And I share a story about having an opportunity to spend 6 weeks living with a tribe in Fiji. When I landed in Fiji, I was planning to spend 5 days there, and it ended up being 6 weeks. And I didn't realize that there's 374 islands in this island nation. And what I realized in my time there was, first of all, that there's no word for stress in the Fijian language.
Wow.
And even though the tribe's people lived in diminutive homes with dirt floors and no windows, and they didn't have any iPads, they didn't have iPhones, and they certainly didn't have any IRAs, they had the biggest, brightest, broadest smiles. And they were the happiest people I'd ever met. And from this experience, I realized that although these people don't have big wallets, big pocketbooks, they don't have riches, they are some of the wealthiest people that I've ever met. So from that question, I would say that riches come more from the size of your bank account. And more importantly, in my opinion, wealth comes more from your heart.
Yeah.
And from your happiness.
I like that. And I agree with you. And I think the happiest person that I ever knew, someone that I got into business with once, was probably one of the poorest people I ever knew. His wife at the time was a telephone operator. You know, that's a position that's gone out of business. You know, someone, when you'd call 411, they would help you find the listings, if you're old enough to remember that. I'm old enough, but it's hard for me to remember it. But it was amazing. He was starting an entrepreneurial business and literally rubbing sticks and stones together. And he was the happiest guy. And he had chronic back problems. He still was the happiest guy. So I think that's a great distinction. And that's what I really like about your book is you, I think, kind of massage the reader into coming to that distinction and recognizing it. But you also have some no-nonsense, like financial stuff in there. So let's let's get into some of the no-nonsense financial stuff. So the concept that the return of your money is more important than the return on your money, which is sort of what you talked about. But can you explain to our listeners what you mean by that?
Yeah, well, Hank Aaron hit more legal home runs than any other baseball player in history. Mm-hmm. Hank Aaron struck out more than any baseball player in history. And when we're in the accumulation phase, like many of your listeners who have are second-gen business owners, you can afford to take more risks and invest into IPOs in some of the unknown. You certainly don't want to do that with all your money, but you could take more risks in general because you have more time value of money. But as you approach that financial pinnacle and you're getting closer to the distribution phase, which is where we take over with our clients' lives, in my opinion, it doesn't make sense to take on unnecessary risk because you've already accumulated wealth. And if you're willing to take, if you're willing to strike out more just to hit home runs, it could have a detrimental impact. So I always like to say that the return of your money takes precedence over the return on your money. It's not about hitting home runs anymore. But at the same time, we can't just put your funds in the bank account. Last year, you would have lost 7% purchasing power just with the detrimental impact of inflation. But it's just trying to change people's mindset we don't want to take on any unnecessary risk.
Right. So so your clients then are have reached the pinnacle and they're on their descent at this point. They've maybe exited their company or they've had a liquidity event or they've just reached the point in time where their earning potential is starting to decline. And do I have it right?
Well, very often their earnings, their income actually could increase in their years of, if we're going to use that word, retirement or financial independence. Mm-hmm. But they're at the stage of life where they've paid their dues.
Right.
They've been running their companies. They've worked in upper level management for Fortune 500 companies. They've accumulated wealth. And now they're ready for not the descent of life, but the descent of what I call their financial mountain, the distribution phase.
Understood.
The word descent doesn't need to be negative. In their case, it's usually very positive. They're, because of their hard work, they're now able to do all the things that they've always had in their mind's eye.
Well, I imagine though that they're not immune from the yo-yos of the market, which we've seen a lot of in the month of January, 2022. We've seen a real retrenchment of certainly tech stocks, the cryptocurrencies, where we know the young people are betting their, you know, their future fortunes on. How are they experiencing this, you know, while working with your firm or just in general? How are you, do you think these people who are on the descent, the how do we want to call it? They're on the burn
they're
side,
in the
maybe
the distribution phase.
Okay. Right.
Well, I think most people without true guidance are scared to death anytime the markets drop when they're no longer bringing in any earned income from their employer or from their business. Mm-hmm. But with true planning for this distribution phase, there's no need for apprehension during times like this. You know, we have different ways. We have two chapters in Failure is Not an Option that is just dedicated to how we got our clients through 08, which was the worst market correction in history. Mm-hmm. You know, what we're, you know, in a nutshell, one of the pieces that has really led to peace of mind is, well, we take a look at all of our clients' core expenses in retirement. And these are the expenses that no one in this phase of life can do without. Things like food, shelter, transportation, taxes, healthcare. And we're firm believers that all of these expenses should be guaranteed for life. We don't care how it's guaranteed, but it needs to be guaranteed. So for example, let's say someone's living on $200,000 a year net of tax income, but $100,000 of that is towards the core necessity expenses. And let's say that they have $30,000 coming in from Social Insecurity, and they have $30,000 coming in because they're one of the lucky ones that still have a corporate pension. Now they have $60,000 or 60% of that $100,000 coming in with guaranteed income sources. What we'd eventually be sharing with them is where we could take a small portion of their overall portfolio, place it with an A++ rated company that's going to give them $40,000 a year of guaranteed income. So that guaranteed income, along with their pension, along with their Social Security, is covering their core expenses. And then as we go up the hierarchy of needs, the next would be joy, because we don't just work so hard in our working years to cover the necessity expenses. We want things like travel and hobbies and gifts, which is AKA for grandchildren. And these don't need to be guaranteed. And this is where we're doing a different type of investing. We're firm believers in for a portion of a portfolio in exchange traded funds because of their diversification and low expenses.
Right.
And in the tax loss harvesting that's able to go along with that.
So you kind of the, gotcha. Years ago, there was the old adage that the percentage of bonds versus stocks that you would own would be, you know, equivalent, I think, to your age. So if you're 60 years old, 60% of your portfolio should be in bonds, 40% in other asset classes. Is that gone out the window?
I think so. I mean, there's something to all these. There's that law of 4%, which is never live on more than 4% of your income. Does that mean everyone should only live on 4%? Not necessarily. I mean, there's some, all these principles make sense to a certain extent, but that's generic planning on your own. And we want to do more focused planning for that particular client. I will say, though, that in the second half of the financial journey, you do need stocks to live well and you need bonds to sleep well. And it's finding that balance.
Yeah.
But the only thing constant in life is change. And now we have interest rate risk. And interest rates, as we all know, have been artificially held low for many years. The Fed just announced today that they're probably going to be increasing those to help with the inflation rates starting in March. And so very often now there's interest rate risk when people's bonds are due. They can't reinvest them and get that same rate of return. So we're looking for different types of bond-like alternatives out there. There's always changes going on, which is another reason why we believe it's so important not to have a set it and forget it approach when it comes to financial planning. A lot of financial planners create this plan, the assets come up over under the management, and then only if there's a death or divorce are those plans updated. And we believe, especially in the second half of the financial journey, that these financial blueprints need to be updated each and every year.
Yeah. Makes sense. Do the older generation, are they allergic to crypto, Bitcoin, Ethereum type investments? Are any of them have an appetite for them or should they?
You know, you were talking about the three different types of mindsets and the entrepreneurials, and those that are the entrepreneurials are certainly open to it and they're excited about it.
Right.
But most of them go more with that Warren Buffett way of thinking, where if you don't understand it, or as Peter Lynch says, if you can't explain it with a crayon, don't invest in it.
Right.
They're going to be more down with that ideology.
Gotcha. Speaking of that, you know, Peter Lynch philosophy, I think it was Tom Peters who had a philosophy like to ask your mother-in-law. So, you know, like what stocks, you know, should you buy based on like, so where are people shopping these days? Or where do you see long lines or what's popular? Is that one out the window also? Because it seems like you could do a lot of stock picking just based on, you know, what are people talking about?
Yeah, I think you're right. I smile when you say Tom Peters. He was one of the first, business books I ever read, In Search of Excellence.
Right.
And earlier you and I were talking about some of our other favorites like Les Brown and Gino Wickman and Dan Sullivan. So that brings a big smile. But yeah, I mean, you look at, are you familiar with the car company called Rivian?
Yes, been following them a little bit, you know, now and then on the ticker tape.
Yeah, so Ewan McGregor did a documentary using Rivian's called Long Way Up 2 years ago, and it was the first test market of this car, this battery operated pickup truck. And he took it from Tierra de Fuego all the way up to your hometown of Los Angeles. And that opened my eyes. And then just last month they went public and they just started selling their first automobiles, and they're the third most valuable car company on the planet Earth.
Isn't that unbelievable?
I mean, times have changed.
So the first being, I guess, Tesla, the second one, General Motors?
Toyota.
Of course. Okay.
Yes.
Interesting. And, so, you know.
And so there is something to be said for that, Jonathan. I mean, if I, you know, for people who are interested in Rivian, the battery operated car, I say go out and buy some shares of it.
Right.
But don't put all your eggs in that one basket.
Absolutely. Same thing I'd say with crypto. You want to put 1-3% of your assets. I mean, I'm a little younger, a little more bullish, but it's been a bit of a yo-yo of a ride. Absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of people don't have $40,000 to buy one share.
I know. They say the average person in America only has like $500 or something like that in savings. I forgot that statistic came out during COVID, but yeah. Is that even remotely possible that the vast majority of Americans don't have even more than a month's worth of money in the bank?
That is correct. All the stats show that. And they also show that most people spend more time planning their annual vacation than they do their financial future.
Right. I wish I could say I planned my annual vacation, but I wing those myself too.
I bet you're pretty darn good at that though.
Pretty good. Exactly. So, all right. So let's talk about how to make financial planning fun. It seems to be a daunting topic. I know that, again, in the family businesses that I'm working with, the older generation, I have a client who is pushing his dad to do a financial plan and he's dragging his feet. And it's not like he doesn't have good people to help him, good advisors. I just don't think that he wants to do it. And I can't say why. Why is it such an ominous topic for so many people?
Oh, I think money is daunting. Most of us have learned our financial lessons from our parents, and our parents learned their lessons from their parents who went through the Great Depression and have a lot of warped mindsets around money, having been brought up in that time period. At the end of the day, our schools have done a horrible job educating our youth about money. And the things that we talked about earlier, the things that are in my book, the things that you alluded to about what Einstein called the eighth wonder of the world, the power of compound interest.
Right.
I ask people, how many times do you have to double a penny to get to $1 million? And most people think, oh, 10,000 times, 100,000 times. And the reality is if you double that penny for 30 days, you have over $5 million.
Wow.
And that's the power compound interest. And telling stories like this is the way to add more fun into the education of it. And if we could teach our youth, which is what I try to do with my second book called Keep Climbing, A Millennial's Guide to Financial Planning, and share these principles that have been around for a long time, but rarely taught in our schools. So you say, how do you make it fun? Well, education is such a big part of it. And the way that I've been able to take the mundane topic of financial planning and try to add some levity to it, as you alluded to, every chapter, no matter what book I've written, starts with a riveting true life travel story. And that leads into a financial lesson. And right when there's maybe one or two too many graphs in that chapter, it goes right into the next chapter with another travel story. And so I've been using this method, not just in the books, but in my own podcast, using it when I speak around the country. And it's been very effective to get people's attention and get them enthusiastic about planning. Because as you know all too well, when you fail to plan, you're planning to fail.
Agreed. I know that you believe strongly, based on your philosophy, it's about having your assets working for you. So that means it's all about time in the markets and not timing the markets. And yet I seem to always get with advisors who like to time the markets. And let's talk a little bit about active management versus passive management. So active managers trade quite frequently. You know, passive managers use kind of more of a buy and hold, I think, type of approach, and they get that power of the compounding. What's your thought about this? I've done some research that suggests that active management isn't all that effective and that most of them don't outperform the market. But it seems hard to believe that they can't time some things and at least figure out when to get in, when to get out, when to get back in, when to get out.
Yeah, that line I love, it's about time in the markets and not timing the markets. The reason I'm very much against timing the markets is you have to be lucky twice.
Right.
You have to be lucky when you get out of the market, and you have to get more lucky when to get back in. An example of this would be in 2008, and I write a story about a gentleman that came into my office, and he told me how he serendipitously got out of the market just before, just using his gut intuitive feel, right before the markets dropped. And the, you know, the S&P dropped over 50% in 08 and including early 09.
Mm-hmm.
And then the markets, a year later, a couple of years later, actually hit an all-time high.
Right.
And he's sitting on the sidelines waiting for the markets to drop more to come in. And then they kept hitting an all-time high. And as of today, the markets are up 542% since that low, and he's sitting in cash.
Unbelievable.
Another example would be in March of 2020. That was the month when we realized that this global pandemic is real. And you might remember, in 1 week, the S&P dropped 34%. And millions of Americans sold out of their 401ks and their IRAs and their different brokerage accounts based on fear, F-E-A-R, false evidence appearing real. And by the end of the year, the markets not only came back all the way, but they were up 43%. And now they're up well over 125% since March of 2020. And that includes the sell-off since the beginning of this year. And so those people, based on fear, got out of the market, had to get lucky twice of when to get back in. And now the markets are too expensive to get back in and they're sitting on cash.
Yeah.
There's never been a down market in real estate. There's never been a down market in the stock market that hasn't ever rebounded to hit an all-time high.
Yeah. So true, David. Absolutely. So tell me, tell our listeners a little bit about your firm. Its focus, we've heard a little bit about, but you're in Bend. You work with individuals, companies, you work with them worldwide, nationwide, West Coast. Tell us a little bit about.
So we are just starting our 21st year in practice. The focus of our practice is helping people with the distribution phase, mm-hmm. putting a blueprint together to give them the answers. And then if we're invited to, after consulting with them and creating that blueprint, we can help them also with the investing side of things. Those are two different hats that we wear. We're an independent financial firm, which means our only fiduciary responsibility is to our client and no big brother investment Wall Street firm, although
right.
we have access to every A-plus rated firm. We help a lot of people with business transitions, helping them with tax savings when they're selling their companies. We help people with their planned giving and setting up donor advised fund to also save on taxes and making sure that their estate transfers onto their heirs in the most tax efficient way possible. We find that we're the most benefit to those with $2 million or more of investable assets. And we have a lot of fun with what we do.
Do you recommend that someone who's younger get a financial plan and put it in place if they're, let's say, a millennial, 25 to 40, and do that now?
Absolutely. Although that's not the right demographic for us to be working with, mm-hmm. that's exactly the reason why I wrote that second book, Keep Climbing, A Millennial's Guide to Financial Planning. It is so important to start in your youth. And you started off our podcast episode today by telling that story about the 19-year-old that started versus the 26-year-old and the power compound interest. And that sums it up better than anything can.
Fantastic. Best way to reach you is through RoselleWealthManagement.com or on LinkedIn?
Yeah. R-O-S-E-L-L, wealthmanagement.com. I'm David at RoselleWealthManagement.com, and you can find the books on Amazon and Audible. And yeah. If you have any listeners have any questions, feel free to reach out at any time.
Well, I heartily recommend the book, at least as a starting point. It really gives readers a sense of your philosophy and your interests and your wisdom. You impart quite a bit of wisdom through these lessons. So I really appreciate you sharing that with me. And folks, pick up a copy of Failure is Not an Option by David Rosell.
Great to be on your show. Thank you very much, Jonathan.
David, thank you. And folks, if you like this show, give us a great review on Apple Podcasts or whatever player you're listening to, and share it with others. Thanks so much for listening.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the GoldhillGroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.